Blog Talk Radio.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Then you fear, then it's your friend. Well, I guess that I'm a gambler, and that I'll always be. So time and luck both run out on me. So won't you say a prayer for me when I leave tonight? With luck and the grace of God, I'll be alright. And there's a fine line. Well, the fight in life, it's over before it starts. You see, it's won or lost in the will of a human heart. So won't you say a prayer for me when I leave tonight? With luck and the grace of God, I'll be alright. There's a fine line between the living and the
the game, wherever the game's at. Oh, let me get this together. I am late. The boss is going to hold that against me. I'm my own supervisor, and it's 6-6 in the bottom of the fourth inning in Chicago.
Anderson, a single and one scored in the bottom of the first. And five unanswered, beg your pardon, by Houston. The Sox scored 5 in the third. The Astros scored 1 in the top of the end.
Where am I at? I'm trying to get this. Still no computer system, still in hell. We're working on it. Four two four two four three nine five four zero. Hey, 424-243-9540. If you want to call in and talk, I'm in a kickback mood. I was in Ohio earlier. Had my medical intake and pretty kicked back waiting for this ball game. It came on late. Took a ride out in the country on my gator today, trying to be somebody. And I assume this is working.
15 playoff hits and another leadoff single for Anderson. This one starts the fourth. I like that Greinke in any situation, but I do agree with that. Just bring him in. Just, you know what? Why would you? You have guys that are down there, but that's what they do. They come in mid-game. Their craft is getting people out. You know, like Yenny was earlier. We talked about how he was one of the best in all of baseball.
There. Sending out a promotion. Let's see. The show started at 10 o'clock. It's 10:14, and we are now sending out a little bit of a advertisement, I guess, if you will.
To put the leadoff man on base in three of the last four innings. Of course, it was Anderson. In the third, it was Robert with a walk. He came around on the Grandal two-run home run. I was just thinking ahead, you know, like, let's just say the Astros or the White Sox go first and second here, no out. There's not a whole lot of fun going on in these games.
Sure.
So that wouldn't be one reason to bring him back, because he's an incredible athlete, great fielder in this position, too.
No. Leroy Garcia, maybe. If they aren't in, it's maybe.
But they never expect it.
My word.
Off the fish, Wolf pass for Chuck and that 2-0 Anderson get their first to third. The throw from Tucker's not there. The Astros shift more than any other team in the American League. That time the shift hurts them.
From a pitching perspective, I know the shift probably helps you more than it hurts.
It definitely helps more than it hurts.
It probably does for sure. But as a pitcher, the liner that goes past your head, you expect that to be a hit. The one that you get a jam sandwich from somebody and they hit a 47 hopper to second that ends up being a base hit with a guy that's been there for 150 years. Those are the ones that hurt your feelings the most. Whether it makes sense or not, I mean, he made a great pitch, jammed him up big time right there, but he forced it over there and there's nobody there. That's great hitting, but it also hurts the pitcher's feelings. You know, it just hurts you deep.
Feel like he did everything possible to try to get it out on that play. That's first and third, still nobody out, and here is Abreu over two tonight. Garcia's looking for his ground ball back. They'll give up. The Astros feel like they're going to score some more. They'll gladly give up one run for two outs here. That's why the input's not in. And I would honestly be surprised to see Luis Robert try and steal a base here.
Especially Abreu after that. If you get two right here, you've really done it. You've really pulled a magic back over.
Abreu bouncing ball, pass track, three-game lead. On his way to third water, he'll take that base. An RBI from Abreu, and it's 7-6. Back and forth, we go again.
Infield single from Anderson. Robert singled him to third, and the base hit from Abreu drives in the go-ahead run. Yimi Garcia is done. Zach Greinke's coming out of the pen for the Astros.
As an agent, I know all about customization. That's why I love Liberty Mutual. They customize my car insurance, so I only pay for what I need.
How about a throwback?
You got it.
New Dove Men plant-based body wash is different. With plant-based cleansers and moisturizers for healthy and hydrated men's skin, relax your body and mind. Shower with New Dove Men.
Here's a good Halloween trick. Buy a bunch of Reese's. There you go. Turn off all the lights in your house. Yeah. And then just don't answer the door. Before you stand switching straight, just a salad board. Oh, dear, yes, sir. But I must not know what a drag. The king of the stood my every day. This, of course, caused some commotion. All because of that one potion. And once his royal highness knew, the joke's on him. And I was free. He drove me forth with arrows and slings. Cos then I knew. Red Bull gave him wings.
Can you handle our hot honey? It's honey with a spicy kick, and it's about to change everything we know about our hamburger chicken. Topped with crispy bacon and melty Swiss. You'll even want it on our biscuits. Honey just got in.
Oh, we have a lot of blank music there, I guess. I'm all tied up with things. I had no caregiver for, well, actually I do have one now. It's all going well. Married with two children. His name is Jordan. I have a man in the house.
Here he is facing Rondon.
To change. But we'll see. So far, so good. It's different.
Kick is on for Rondon, who hit the 2-1 home run in the third.
424-243-9540. Hey. Man, there's a lot of stuff in there. Ooh, we're up to the L's anyway. There's a lot of K's. Here's some mats.
He's crazy inside the baseline right here. He's in the grass. Doesn't get out of the way. The ball hits him and Luis Robert's sliding in.
Here's a great old conversation. Dr. Kathy Patoni from Dayton, Ohio.
But we're working with the National Association, and we are going to begin to provide access training and certification. So we'll be sending, make sure we have all of your email. In fact, there's a little pink slip out on the table that says CEUs, and you can check if you're interested in active training. Please do check that off. There are a couple of other things on there, and just, you know, leave them at the registration table when you leave. If you came in and you are here and you need CEUs, and I'll leave you with this, if you could, at one of the breaks, go out, if the speech and language pathologist or speech therapist, there is the ASHA survey that you'll need to pick up, and then we also have a stack of the classes and the hours for for the various classes that you'll be attending throughout the conference, and you'll need to have that, obviously, to get, get them checked off so that we can issue your certificate. So do be sure to pick those up as well. And Nancy, what am I forgetting? Well, if that, I don't think the state of the union address should be more than 15 minutes, so I'm going to cut that off right here. But if you have any questions for me or about me, just feel free to grab me out in the hall. But now I'd like to introduce our keynote speaker for this morning. We are honored to have Dr. Kathy Platone. And Dr. Platone, I spent so much time with you last night, but it was all in sound checks and whatnot. So I'm just going to read your bio. Kathy Platone, PsyD, has been a practicing clinical psychologist for more than 30 years and maintains her private practice in Centerville, Ohio. In service of her country and as an Army Reserve clinical psychologist, and thank you for that service, she has deployed on 4 occasions in time of war as a survivor of the tragic Fort Hood massacre in November 2009. She is an ardent activist in support of traumatic stress management. Dr. Platone is a graduate of the School of Professional Psychology of Nova University, now Nova Southeastern University in Davie, Florida. Subsequent to the conclusion of her doctoral studies under the auspices of the United States Army Health Professional Scholarship Program, she completed her internship on active duty Army status at William Beaumont Army Medical Center in El Paso, Texas. During her 33 years of both active and Army Reserve status,
did you brain injury radio?
During developed combat stress control, debriefings, and crisis management programs utilized throughout the U.S. Army. As a graduate of the Army's Command and General Staff College, she holds the rank of colonel and holds the appointment as Army Reserve Clinical Psychology Consultant to the Chief Medical Service Corps. Dr. Platone maintains an appointment as a Sensitive Clinical Director with the School of Professional Psychology, Wright State University. She is a skilled hypnotherapist, possesses expertise in the subspecialty areas of behavioral medicine and the treatment of chronic pain and chronic debilitating and terminal illnesses. And again, especially in the shadow of September 11th, thank you so much for your service. Thank you for being here. And I want to extend that to anyone else who is service-related in our audience today. Thank you.
I have to get my PowerPoint up and running for you first, and I am not the most technically skilled person in the world, so we have this wonderful gentleman.
I do very costly right in the chest. They never we will. We're celebrating spectrum off. We're one of the line with the
I apologize for this, maybe I have a little bit of a connection.
connection problem.
The festering wounds of war in our bodies, our minds, and our souls, branding us deeply within our flesh from the inside out. We go to war as innocent youth and return aged and worn. I'm really 25. We behave as though all is normal and pure pretense while carrying the anguish cries buried in our stories that haunt and devour our souls and from which there is no respite, no escape. We are the ones who run toward the danger without question or hesitation, ready to cross the line into certain death and suffering of immense proportions, because we are the 1% of the population brave enough to assume this assignment and abundantly willing to do so. We awaken in the shadows of darkness, don our battle rattle, mine weight, half my body weight at least, inspect our equipment, gather in a circle of prayer before the mission, and roll out in our MRAPs and Humvees outside the wire to face the forbidding and dreaded lottery of combat. And we would gladly return to the wartime theater to do it all over again. In a life so simple, so stark, so uncomplicated, there are too many moments, days and months and years when we long desperately to be back in the stew of the battlefield as the crude and cruel indifference of the civilian masses and the vile remarks made in service of mammoth ignorance pitch us headlong into the bottomless chasm of places where we no longer fit. Simply stated, our old selves will never be found hanging in the closet. There is no bridge over the gap between pre-deployment, innocent lives, and the post-deployment world of multiple tours into which we are cast without a lifeline. In today's society, the vast majority remain clueless about the most basic yet foreign concepts of sacrifice, personal accountability, self-discipline, and an unwavering commitment to the greater good. Too often we have become veterans without sanctuary, citizen soldiers without a country. We are abandoned at a time of unequal despair by a society infected with a sense of entitlement, one far too readily embraced by the multitudes. We ask that we not be forsaken by our own in our quest to navigate the jagged trail all the way home. Do not exact an even greater toll by further amputating our spirits, by demeaning our military service, or by deserting us in our time of greatest need with obliviousness. It is only through the dedication of support organizations such as the Brain Injury Association of Indiana that serve wounded warriors and their families, those who suffer the ravages of traumatic brain injuries, that we may survive the internal holocaust that sears our souls and the enormous challenges of brain injuries that impose obstacles of Himalayan proportions. Do not allow our lives to become a wasteland, and know that what community and statewide programs such as BIAI offer are absolutely priceless. Survivorship in the wartime theater. In a desperate search to find meaning in the devastation and human wreckage that define war, it is an unmistakable feat that the human spirit remains triumphant in the face of unequaled adversity. It is in this milieu that we are exposed to unforeseen epiphanies that bestow value in the seemingly inconsequential and in places where one would least expect to derive value, meaning, and purpose. There are multiple lessons to be gleaned from the battlefield, but the most astounding instruction may very well be what we discover within one another, what we find in the depths of one's soul. Gives rise to the most extraordinary and vigorous education in regard to the bonds among brothers and sister soldiers that enable survivorship and the very resolve to endure, to flourish. Though the human toll of the battlefield can hardly be quantified, there is remarkable knowledge to be unearthed from the catastrophic. Those very life events that defy the confines of the human experience. It is the warrior ethos that takes on profound meaning in the wartime theater of operations, becoming an all-consuming force that supersedes race, gender, ethnicity, and even military rank structure. There are few comparable driving forces. There is an unanticipated human element to be retrieved from the most inhumane of human enterprises. The power inherent in gearing up for the fight lies in the cohesiveness of the group, the esprit de corps, the culture of pride, and the rallying of the troops that characterizes our military traditions. We further define this as the bonding together of members of an organization, an association, or the entity that comprises the military unit in such a way as to uphold their will and commitment to one another, to the unit itself, and to the mission. It is plainly understood that as an integral member of this community, in which kinship is all-powerful, that risking death to accomplish the designated mission is a sworn and unspoken pledge. The internalization of that unit cohesion is the single most dominant force to render soldiers capable of continuously placing themselves in harm's way, under enemy fire far more than any other pursuit or of any military objective. Such discipline is a matter of self-imposed moral conscience within the military mindset that takes precedence over all else. It is this unparalleled sense of community that fosters the attenuation of regard for the self in lieu of service to others and for the lives at stake. This is the circle of belongingness that becomes the sacred trust surpassing all else. Stated simply, it's about what you would sacrifice and surrender for your uniformed brothers and sisters, a unity and camaraderie to which one would gladly adhere, generating bonds forged for a lifetime. There is nothing so momentous, so significant, as becoming a part of a company of unsung heroes, those willing to lay down their lives for brother and sister soldier, airman, marine, sailor, or Coast Guardsman, without reconsideration and in the face of total madness. At some point in this lunatic folly of war, one becomes molded or transformed into that collective persona, where accountability for the lives outside of one's own become the all-encompassing reason for being. This is the pure and unadulterated antithesis of man's inhumanity to man. Their lives in your hands become significantly more vital, more consequential than your own. It is why there is no human force strong enough to stop an infantryman from rounding the corner in the most treacherous neighborhoods of sectarian violence, knee-deep, floating in sewage, M16 engaged, knowing that the next millisecond may be his very last on earth, to clutch the collar of his dying comrade in order to drag him to safety. Plainly, what you would do is ingrained in your soul, as you would forsake all else to accomplish the most unselfish of deeds. In the face of mortal danger, nothing else matters but who has become your next of kin. And it is in the heat of battle, where the front lines are indistinguishable from the rear echelon, where there is no embarrassment for the breadth and depth of bonding among boots on the ground, and the unshakable expressions of love for one another, which almost always surpasses race, ethnicity, age, and gender. It is the need not to seek retribution that propels the force and refuels the demand for vindication of lives lost. In the heat of battle and the type of warfare where the front lines cannot be found. There are multitudes of service members who will spend their lives consumed with sorrow for the lives they were unable to save, their buddies, from any number of insurgent, Taliban, Al-Qaeda, killing machines. Even more heartbreaking is the likelihood that he or she will never come to appreciate that there was such greatness in their vain efforts. These Middle Eastern lands, so dismal, so unforgiving, that death often seems like a desirable escape, offers little respite from what long ago became a cesspool of violence. Early on in this process, one comes to recognize that there is no choice but to be resilient in the face of unceasing horror. You give up, you let go, you die, others die. This is why survivor guilt is one of the more noxious form of blights upon the lives of injured soldiers. But it is in this terrible woundedness that many will find a newfound strength to carry on with fortitude and no turning back. This is what perpetuates that internal compulsion to forsake all else in order to return to the battlefield and to live another day for the sake of one's buddies, their comrades in arms. This is why, despite splintered bones and traumatic amputations, eye sockets that will never again house an eye, and shattered personal lives that will never begin to approximate previous lives, it is the triumph of the human spirit that commands these soldiers to recover from the unimaginable. In some miraculous cases, the critically and severely injured have actually returned to the wartime theater. Few acts are more selfless. We are tormented incessantly by the generator that breaks down 30 to 40 times a day. What is air conditioning? The infrastructure which American troops have been tasked to deliver to the millions of oppressed, and that may some year provide liberation from what feels like the inside of a dryer with the select switch turned on high. We are exhausted by the daily hunt for toilet paper, while the indigenous have mastered the craft of crapping in the streets. There are innumerable times we are stunned awake, landing stuporously on our feet, blown from a prone to a standing position at full attention by vehicle-borne IEDs, bombs, regular IEDs, rocket-propelled grenades, or mortars close enough to violate personal space and to invade any speck of safety anywhere on the planet. More days than not, mortar attack wake-up calls are far more reliable than any timepiece. There are even more days that we are amazed to have awakened to live another day above ground. Everything miserable is further magnified by the perpetration of crimes against humanity and the daily doses of abuses of power by our own leadership, those mistakenly placed in charge with minimal exposure to what right looks like. There are too many who are forced to bear unregulated persecution at the hands of extraordinarily feeble leadership, whose primary mission is to find their way to the gym or the pool at one of Saddam's 150 palaces, while the remainder of us spend our days and nights ducking and covering from indirect fire, rocket and mortar attacks, while living out in mortared rubble piles with no more than a dream of a shower every 6 weeks. Everybody smells like a goat. So if you smell like a goat, you're not standing out. If there were a means for manufacturing bottles of mood whitener, this would clearly be the correct setting for first-line FDA approval. There are far too many moments and hours and days and weeks of such brutal despair that fantasies of eating the barrel of one's own weapon provide the only possible offer of relief in sight. We're suffering in an infinite number of ways, remains interminable and perpetual. For me, it was the brutality and ruthlessness of venomous leadership and malicious vindication that led to such a degree of despair. But nevertheless, we survive because it is our sacred trust to do so for those who count upon us. It is under this extreme duress that character, true character, is often revealed. Deplorable and unmerciful conditions certainly make for the most remarkable human laboratories and bear witness to the nature of interpersonal relationships that transcend the shackles of self-interest. When under heavy fire and engaging enemy combatants without regard to one's safety and survivability, advancing towards the enemy in the noble act of saving the lives of fellow man and woman alike, that genuine heroism is often displayed. These aren't necessarily extraordinary human beings that perform such feats under the most dreadful of circumstances, never spoken, but nevertheless pressed upon the soul. It is this tacit pledge to commit to the deeds that exceed the boundaries of the self, that overwhelming sense of community of humankind that cries out and permits us to bear witness to the magnitude of true greatness to which humankind can aspire. This commands us with absolute suspension of the needs and desires of the self in service of others, and perhaps there are few more magnificent or superior gifts. Yet that very concept lies within the core of the warrior ethos, the willingness to suspend one's life for one's fellow warriors. What then becomes critical is the willingness to also suspend all judgments pertaining to the self and instead to do what one will in order to defend the lives of those whose names and faces or even unknown to us, to carry an extra 300 rounds of ammunition as a promise to shield those who strive to trust you that you would do so. And it is in the midst of such urgency that one's own life may very well cease to have meaning unless willing to surrender it in service of one's brother, sister, soldier. But this is pure sustenance, a testament to what is still today right and virtuous and decent in a world drowning in self-righteous entitlement and moral degradation. This is where self-orientation and involvement give way to altruism to confront the thornier issue of stepping up to the plate or the platter for a cause greater than seeking personal pleasure and reward. It's all too simple to be blinded and overindulged in a world of excesses. There are those genuinely destined to strive in the face of adversity who are adept at spinning gold out of rags. True survivorship is born of this struggle, the toll and the toil and labor of adapting to and overcoming the most and torturous of life circumstances that can be offered. From this utter despondency comes the resilience to overcome the insurmountable, to gain strength in the face of tremendous sorrow and unceasing despair. For those of us who have defied pain of immeasurable proportions to endure unspeakable torment, and where there is no chance of locating the off switch to misery, we are obliged to unearth that message that enormous good may be cultivated from the unbearable. It is out of this struggle from the darkness and desolation that threaten to consume us with stagnation, to find riches and enlightenment, where a transformed spirit is permitted to flourish. The most adverse of life circumstances can be the most remarkable and exceptional of teachers. The unmistakable lesson here is that becoming keeper for brother and sister soldier, friend or colleague, or the community of humanity itself may exceed all other life experiences. When exposed to searing flame, clay reemerges as the finest of porcelain china. It was Rabbi Kraft who recounted the parable of the two woodchoppers who had chopped down a tree that was far more than 100 years old. And as they studied the growth rings, as a matter of curiosity to determine the age of the tree, the younger of the two men noticed that there were 5 narrow rings among 10 wider ones. He concluded that the 5-year drought had produced very little growth in this tree. But the older and wiser man, far wise, however, came to a very different conclusion. It was his contention that 5 years of drought were actually the most significant in the history of the tree. Forced to send its roots deeper into the ground to draw water and minerals from the earth necessary for survival, the root system was fortified, permitting more rapid growth and reaching of majestic heights with the passing of the seasons of drought. It is under times of duress and anguish that our own growth potential to overcome the seemingly inconceivable is fueled and that infinite resources can be tapped. It is within all of us that need, that desire for life to have meaning and direction and purpose, the whys of suffering of immense proportion that give rise to the hows of one's existence and where the will for survival is born and aimlessness overcome. This can't help but draw upon a degree of hardiness and resilience that may eclipse all other life experiences. Commit to untold challenges passionately. Draw and cherish unparalleled joys from immersion in the struggle to extract from life's barren lands that may have caused planetary existence as we know it to run dry. Witnessing this victory of the human spirit to endure indescribable hardships and all that is dreadful and vile is unlike anything that one can experience in the ordinariness of life on the American home front. There truly is no limit to the learning that stems from deprivation and austerity. In countless ways, life changes exponentially when one has come to lay down their heads in death traps spanning the entirety of the wartime theater. There are no bounds to the value and significance of tackling head-on the raw, tragic, and frequently horrific consequences of combat upon our armed forces, particularly outside of the safer, more garrison-like environments. There is nothing more imperative than awakening from far less than peaceful slumber, forever with one eye open, ready to dive for cover at a moment's notice, in the most literal sense, than to have the backs of those who have arms, to sit among them for hours or days on end, to dive into the deepest recesses of our souls, to offer up anything that will diminish their brutal grief their agony. In the unending throes of tragedy and maiming and death by the very most of unnatural causes, the ties that bind us to one another are virtually all we have at our disposal. And it is in the grasp of one another's arms that we will find solace and the ability to restore ourselves from mayhem and heartbreak. We don't go to war for our country and the cause of freedom nearly as much as we go to safeguard the lives of our friends. It is these ties that unite us in times of unparalleled suffering and catastrophe, which forge relationships that will endure for a lifetime, and that often exceed the closeness of family. Departing this and attempting to replace it on the home front becomes the new struggle, as those willing to lay down their lives are among life's most treasured keepsakes, unlikely to be replaced anywhere else. Leaving this behind is an immense loss. If nothing else, it is ours to seize the knowledge of all that can be gathered in regard to survivorship in the face of human tragedy and the interconnectedness of those who are flung together under the most cataclysmic of life circumstances that make life more worthwhile than one might ever envision. It is in one another that the will and determination to survive the unfathomable is fueled and from which resilience thrives. And so it is in the aftermath of these events that we must hang together so that our souls do not perish in the pangs of an emotionally amputated life. What we must prevent at all costs is the disintegration of those imperatives on the home front. We must seek every opportunity to perpetuate the lessons that remain pure sustenance, to celebrate the invincibility of the human spirit, and admittedly, there are more than a few who would not seek to repeat these death-defying experiences, to do this wartime thing all over again, to render ourselves vulnerable to an early demise just for the opportunity to re-experience the camaraderie, the closeness of kinship that once sustained us and that is pivotal to our emotional survival in war's aftermath. In this endeavor, we might surely die for the opportunity. I would like to speak now about the survivors of the Fort Hood shooting. I have a little video once this slideshow is over. We're almost at the end. Many of you probably don't know, well, Laura did mention it, thank you, Laura, for doing that, that I am a survivor, one of the very fortunate survivors of the Fort Hood massacre, which was an illustration of the survivability of the human spirit and things that one would never expect to experience on the home front. The Fort Hood massacre, which occurred on November 5th of 2009, was the largest terrorist incident, though it has not been labeled a terrorist incident by our government. It's the act of a disgruntled employee, watch me roll my eyes, and workplace violence. Largest terrorist incident on American soil since 9/11. There were 32 people injured, 13 killed, and this is how the story unfolded. As you probably all are aware, the court-martial convened on August 6th and ended the last week in August, and the shooter, I'll refer to him instead of Nidal Hassan, the shooter received the death penalty, which he wanted as a martyr, but what other sentence makes sense. But that was a day of incredible survivability. That is the memorial fence around the buildings where the shooting took place at Fort Hood. Adal Hassan was a major in the United States Army. He was a psychiatrist, not a very competent one, and there has been unearthed a mountain of evidence to the tune of a 90-page closing argument demonstrating all of the facts that were known to the FBI and that were never translated to the Department of Defense and the Department of the Army. There are also many people responsible for promoting the shooter and not processing him out of the Army so that the danger could be lessened. In the years before the massacre, Adal Hassan became more radicalized, gave many presentations about his radical Muslim beliefs in the workplace, not appropriate, and nobody did anything. He talked about making people pay and making them sorry if he was deployed, and nobody did anything. He bought some deadly weapons at Guns Galore and 420 rounds of ammunition in 30 extended magazines, and nobody paid attention. He stuffed paper towels in his pockets on the day of the shooting so that nobody could hear all these extended magazines clinking around in his pockets. I think we're starting all over again. I'm going to stop and show you a short video as a tribute and then continue with the lessons of survivability. It was in those moments during the shooting that I witnessed the most remarkable of human endeavors on that fateful day. The shooter was in the building where people were processing to go to Afghanistan and Iraq. That means medical checks, legal wills, powers of attorney, vaccinations, blood work, all of those usual things that the Army does that take forever and ever and ever in order to be ready to deploy. I was sitting in Station 13, where the shooting originated, and a young soldier came up to me and tapped me on the shoulder and said, "Ma'am, would you come with me?" And I said, "Why? Where are we going?" And he said, "Well, you're a full bird colonel, K-E-R-N-E-L, so you need an escort." Well, I said, "I do? No, I don't. I'm going to sit right here at the end of the line and wait my turn like everybody else." Besides, all of my friends were sitting there. Well, about 20 minutes later, another soldier came up and tapped me on the shoulder and said, "Ma'am, few of you need to go to that building across from the building where the shooting took place, because there's just too many people in here. You have to go to overflow." So I went to overflow and then moved on to the next building. At about, I think it was about 1:35 in the afternoon, I heard one of the civilian employees yelling, they're shooting in the other building. And I ran towards the door to go towards that building, because that's what people in uniform do. You run towards the danger. Same goes for police, fire, paramedics. People who wear that uniform run towards the danger. It's ingrained in what it is that you do. Sadly, I never got out the door because they were bringing in the dying and wounded. It was Captain John Gaffney who rushed the shooter and sustained 3 mortal wounds in the process. He is the soldier that died at my feet. He was to deploy to Iraq. My unit went to Afghanistan. And Nadal Hassan knew which units were going. I saw the evidence. I was supposed to be his direct supervisor. I moved out of the way. So my survivor guilt is something that I battle every day. Did somebody take the round meant for me? Because I lost 5 good friends. Those who survived went rushing headlong back into that building multiple times to pull out as many people as they could. This is the hero bracelet that we all wear. I'm sure you've all seen soldiers and veterans wear these bracelets. It says 467th and 1908th. Those are our 2 units, the 467th Medical Detachment and the 1908th Medical Detachment, or both combat stress control units. And it says, this is a Bible verse, "Who will go for us? Here am I. Send me." 11509. Major Caraveo, he was a dear friend of mine, also a clinical psychologist that I recruited for this mission. Captain John Gaffney, psychiatric nurse. Staff Sergeant Amy Kruger, mental health technician. Captain Russell Seeger, nursing professor and nurse practitioner. And Lieutenant Colonel Juanita Warman, also nurse practitioner. Some of these folks were first-time deployers, had just come into the military in their 50s because they so desperately wanted to serve. Captain Gaffney had left the military, I believe, in the early 80s as a major and even accepted a reduction in rank to come back in and serve once again. Michael Pearson, I believe he was a PFC private first class, battled the shooter and sustained 5 rounds. Most of those killed, or many of those killed, like Mr. Cahill, who was a retired warrant officer and a physician's assistant, also fought off the shooter and died in the process. This is what people who have served and who still serve and who wear that uniform are willing to do for their brothers and sisters. And they take it in stride because that is what you carry in your heart. That is what is all purposeful and has no greater meaning than anything else that you will ever do in this lifetime. I witnessed incredible survivorship of an extraordinary kind that I've never seen before and hopefully will never have to witness again. But at least we know that justice in some way has been served for the families and the wounded. What has happened to many of the wounded, as many of you have probably read in the press, is that because this has never been labeled an act of war, terrorism, or treason, I'll just throw that one in there, they can't get their Purple Hearts and their medical benefits. They've lost their careers. They've lost their health. Staff Sergeant Ziegler, who I met at the court-martial, has lost 20% of his brain. And still got up on the stand to testify and confront this mass murderer. Survivorship of the finest kind. And these people will never recover from their wounds. Some of them who sustained superficial wounds will still carry the horror of what they witnessed that day on the largest American military installation in the United States. It's interesting that the sign as you enter the gate says, Fort Hood, a really great place. So I think they need to change that. But it's what you would do to sacrifice your own life for the others who wear that uniform, and yes, even the civilians who may also be in harm's way. That's what wearing the uniform is all about, and that's why it's so vital that we have organizations like the Brain Injury Association of Indiana to take care of these suffering souls so that they can have some degree of a quality life and function in society and with their families. So my thanks go to you for what you bring to that banquet table of generosity of spirit and all of the good works that happen on behalf of those soldiers who have returned with traumatic brain injuries and PTSD and traumatic amputations and God knows what other kinds of horrific injuries. That's what it's all about, bonding together with the community in spirit and in presence so that we can all come home and have a home. Thank you. And now we can open the floor for some questions in the time that we have remaining. Any questions about the combat theater, the types of injuries? Yes.
Well, I was curious about how to help soldiers to get the help that they need. Because I know that
and it, you know, that's the sticky wicket question. Where are they and how do we direct them towards treatment? And so many of us are hidden, and when we come home we take off the uniform so you don't know who is a veteran. It's, you know, one of the ways to do that is to call the closest VA and to find out if there are any community support organizations where there are veterans. talk to family and friends. There's no easy way to dig these people out, and oftentimes they do go into hiding because they cannot tolerate being in society again. Talk to any local organization. If there's a vet center in your community, that may be another good place to access. I'm sorry, you have another question.
I just wondered, in terms of, even if you find veterans, like you said, going into hiding or not wanting to be the one getting the help, I mean, it seems like they defer to somebody else. Somebody else needs the service, they don't need the service. And I was just wondering if you have any thoughts on that.
Boy, you know, again, a sticky wicket. If people are unwilling to stand up and ask for help, sometimes it falls on the community of family members to really facilitate people getting help. And it really is a difficult problem. I live in the Dayton, Ohio area, and unless people call me up, which they do all the time, I don't know where the veterans are. Another good thing to do is find out what Reserve and National Guard units are in your area and call those units to find out if there are any soldiers who are in need of services and what you or the IAI might be able to do for them. And I know, well, my old unit is in Indianapolis, the 55th Medical Company, but there are some reserve units, less and less with the drawdown throughout the state of Indiana. You might call I'll have to get some information for you on the National Guard Bureau main numbers, because finding out where these people are is probably the best way to locate them. It's no easy task. And a lot of people want to remain undercover because society is a rough place to be in this day and age. I'm always sitting in the restaurant looking towards the door, and if there's a loud noise, I'm under the table. I'm always having to apologize for that. It's sometimes very uncomfortable. So people aren't as out and about. But if I can get your email address, I do have some resources that you can tap. One of the best ones to contact is the local chapter of Blue Star Mothers or Operation Thank You, and I have a 121-page list of resources of organizations that I'm going to be giving to Laura that she can put on a link for everybody. And those organizations, AfterDeployment.com, Real Warriors, the Soldiers Project, Wounded Warrior Project, those organizations may help you locate soldiers who are in need of help. I hope that in some way answers your question.
Thank you.
Yes?
My brother-in-law is a veteran who is struggling with some people, things that he served himself. And my first question would have been her question, but my next, what about the family? My sister and the children are struggling. He's turned to addiction. Are there things from families that the VA offers as well, or is it mostly just for the veterans?
At the VA, the only...
I'm going to get him somewhere in Ohio now, but he's looking to get, he's on $310 a month at this point. So.
Wow.
What about the kids?
Through the vet centers, they do. Anybody familiar with the vet center concept? Veterans Readjustment Counseling Centers. They are strategically located near and around every major city, and I know there's one in the Indianapolis area. They serve not only the veteran, free of charge, families, children, and also serve as a wonderful referral source. They're staffed with veterans, which is one really good way to get veterans in the door because they don't want to talk to anybody who hasn't worn the uniform. So your local vet center is an excellent place to start. Also, Military OneSource provides services for families and children. And in that resource guide that I'm going to give to Laura to put on the website, you will find contact information from Military OneSource. Any other questions?
I have two comments, actually. I worked with the Brain Injury Association of Florida for 9 years, and I worked closely with the West Palm Beach VA, and we had a lot of veterans coming back, and they're starting to come back even more. And something we got involved in, I'm looking at my phone, because we started taking webinars from the Defense and Veterans Brain Injury Center online. They're wonderful.
They are,
in
yes.
Virginia, they're free.
Yes, they are.
You can sign up for them. I still get notices from them, and it's their website.
I'm going to repeat that after you so everybody can write this down. This is the Defense and Veterans Brain Injury
Center.
Yes. Yes, DVBIC free training webinars. They are excellent. I have taken them. There are brain injury centers affiliated with the VA and with some civilian hospitals throughout the United States. They are listed on that site. I think it's DVBIC.org.
Exactly.
There are, thank you for that, yes.
They've been fabulous, and I still take their webinars, you know, now. They talk a lot about PTSD, and they talk a lot about just veterans coming back and how to get more involved, and they give you a lot of really good information.
Yes, that is an excellent website, and thank you for that.
And the second thing, I'm trying to say this without being emotional and yesterday, but I mean, just thank you. I mean, what else can we say to you when you're thanking us? Thank you. You know, thank all of you, everyone. I offer everyone peace and comfort at this time. And
thank you.
Times to come, so thank you.
Thank you for that kindness. Greatly appreciated. There is another website that offers training. It's the Defense Centers for Excellence. It's capital D, capital C, small o, capital E. Defense Centers of Excellence, now located at the Intrepid Center at the new Walter Reed National Military Medical Center. Excellent training webinars. In fact, I just took one on the new DSM-5. Oh, God. Shoot me now. Yeah, oh, green, right? Excellent webinars, and they are free. And since many of you are practitioners, the DVBIC and DECO websites are just excellent. There's also a five-day-a-week newsletter that's overflowing with information on everything from suicide prevention to PTSD to TBI, everything, family support, the works. DHCC. I think it's DHCC.org, the Defense Health Center's newsletter.
DCOE is
right, but the DHCC newsletter. I'll make sure I get that to Laura so that if you want to subscribe to it, it is also free and it comes out 5 days a week. And it's loaded with great information. So thank you for tapping into that. Any other questions? Comments? Call your congressperson. It is absolutely wrong. Call your congressperson. Write a letter to your congresspeople. Yes. Write a letter.
We need to continue. And as the BIAI, because we do work with the legislature, we need to continue.
There you go. It's horrendous that is still the case almost 4 years later. There is a bill before Congress recommending that this ticking time bomb that was so well known about for so long be reconsidered as an act of terrorism so wounded soldiers and their families can obtain their benefits. Oh, boy. I know it was initiated by Joe Lieberman and Susan Collins, I think. And the initial report that came out about 18 months ago is called a ticking time bomb. That may be an entree into further information about this. I should know this bill before Congress. But I don't have the House resolution number. I apologize. Other questions or comments? Okay, I have a question. Are there any veterans in the audience?
Well, about 65 different authors, and I got together and published these books last year, War, Trauma, and Its Weight,
expanding the circle of healing and healing war trauma handled with creative approaches. So since you are veterans, and again, I will autograph these for you. Thank you for your service.
If you have a local media contact, you know, it never hurts to put in a phone call. It never hurts to put in a phone call to your local news media.
I'm going to put a phone call in to you, see if you'll be on my show.
Deal. I'm all trust.
It's radio.
Okay, I'll... We'll talk. And Laura... I have for you, I would like to donate a copy of each of our books to the Brain Injury Association of Indiana. And I, again, will autograph them for you. Any other questions before I let you go so that you can have a break? Yes. That war trauma resource guide that's going to be on the website that Laura's going to post. I'm going to email that to her today. War trauma resources that Ray Scherfield compiled is the single most comprehensive list of resources anywhere in the world right now. I don't know how he pulled it together, but it's 121 pages. So you will find that information in there. Also, I'm not trying to advocate for selling our books, but our second book has a list of its innovative approaches other than evidence-based practices, because one of our breakout sessions indicates one size does not fit all. We all know that cognitive processing therapy and prolonged exposure therapy and EMDR are considered best practices, and they are excellent practices, but they don't work for everybody. I have a friend who's a licensed independent social worker at the VA in Columbus. He was one of the ones that carried Captain John Gaffney and went rushing back into the building. And like many of us who survived two deployments or three deployments or four deployments like me, and the Fort Hood shooting, PTSD is even rampant among clinicians who have deployed multiple times. He did obtain EMDR and found it devastating. It just completely shut him down. And then he went for cognitive behavioral therapy of a more eclectic kind and did just fine. But again, one size does not fit all. So it's what works best for that soldier, that individual. One last question. Yes? I have the discount order form. So because you're a convention attendee, conventioneer, there is, I think it's a 30% discount or a 20% discount, but that's out on the table. Some are one-sided, and then there's the two-sided copy, but the order form, and they ship pretty quickly. And I was going to order my extra copies to bring on Amazon.com, and I found that Routledge Publishers, who published our books, is cheaper with the convention discount rate. So hopefully that's helpful. Thank you all again very, very much for the honor and privilege of speaking to you today. Greatly appreciate it.
Sharon Wendy Robertson. She wrote this song for us.
The world is ever changing, and people come and go. They bring with them a chance to learn and feel and grow. Each moment has a message. Message is a part of lessons on our journey to know the human heart. You can take your money and take your power too, because you can't buy love with those two. Take time to share the moments with those you meet each day. Fill the world with peace and love along your way. Nothing in life matters more, for love will conquer.
What is stress? Stress is chaos. Do you want chaos? The solution to chaos is to remove yourself from the chaos. Do you know how to do that? As you hear these words, you may not see a way out. You may not be able to remove yourself from the situation. It all starts with simple steps. Do this, one step at a time. Remove the thought and replace it with asking. The need to know opens the doorway into your mind. It changes a thought. It is that simple. Be patient with yourself. Being kind with yourself is the most important step. Next, start with your mind and change the thought from "I can't" to another possibility. Allow your true feelings to surface. They are the truth. Now change the negative thoughts. Exchange those words with a thought that brings a smile to your face. Release the thought that is triggering stress. Close your eyes. Visualize something beautiful, kind, and loving. This works even in the most difficult situation. Believe that there is an answer, not to just stress, but everything and anything that hinders or evades you. When you ask and seek solutions, solutions will be provided. Open your mind and open your heart to the possibilities and trust.
Miss Deborah Berry, who I had the honor of speaking with for a couple hours this weekend. Her South Carolina, South Kakalaki girl. She's finding South Carolina a little bit different than Nevada that she's lived in the last 15 years or so. I miss my people. We got to make this official. Because
help me get my feet back on the ground. Won't you please help me? Help me, help me. Help me get my feet back on the ground. Won't you
I'll be back.
Where am I going?
I'll be back.
Chromebook and all, I intend on being back. Do every week that I can. Keyword being every week that I can. We're gearing up for this, our 10th year, kind of being on Brain Injury Radio, a decade. Normally, I have discovered in my 60 years that I spend around a decade in whatever environment I choose to get in, and I work it, and I play it, and I make friends. Yes, I make friends. Excuse me, I make friends. And looking back in this old history section that we call a studio file, there's things I can and cannot and won't do. But we will always have something to play. I have no idea what that is. That is Marlin. Oh, the kitty cats are starting to go crazy. What time is it? They know it's time for my bed. Oh, I'm looking. I'm looking for a closing song, if you will. I seem to have a lot of Sharons in here. I'll take more. Don't get me wrong. Well, a little time and kindness. Mr. Landon Walker.
Have a little kindness. Let the love that you feel for me show. Give me time. Have a little kindness. It might be the only peace of mind I know. Give me time. And a little kindness. That's all that we can ask. Kindness, whether given as my lover or my friend, I can feel you when I'm not with you. Though our life's been so very hard apart, God's the dealer, I'm just the gambler, but I'll play this love out till the final card. Time and a little kindness, and that's all that we can ask for in the end. Give me time and a little kindness, with a given as my lover or my friend. Life is fragile, there's a moment. Should be treated like the very finest gold. And the magic all that we can ask for in the end. Give me time and a little kindness, with a given as my lover or my friend. God's a dealer, I'm just a gambler, but I'll play our love out till the very end.
Legend,
legends die too young, and they'll remember you for the wrong that you done.
Oh, let's rock.
It's the time of the season when love runs high. In the time, give it to me easy and let me try.
One out to get it to the ninth inning. And a strike to Gurriel is thrown at 97 from Kimbrel. The great closers in Major League history up there on the save charts. Pitching in the eighth.
Kimbrel's two-pitch count, a fastball, curveball. Pure power, intimidating stance when he appears in to get a sign. But like you said, one of the best closers of all time. Facing Gurriel, who still seats a hit tonight. Goes after that one, and it's quickly nothing and two. A one scores in a row, sent down by the White Sox bullpen. Kimbrel trying to close the air. Just 13 pitches on Friday in game two for Kimbrel, and obviously the off day Saturday for both teams. Kimbrel downhill on 1-2 to Gurriel. Bouncing ball to Moncada. Picked up by Gray. A 1-2-3 eighth between Bummer and Kimbrel. White Sox have a 3-1 lead, hoping Hendricks can close it out in the top of the ninth. First to the bottom of the eighth.
According to legend, there is a diabolical spirit that devours mankind.
Excuse me, this is a myth.
For you, yeah. Our ancestral spirits never die. Now they're angry.
That was fun.
Alexa, play or dance playlist.
Your playlist. Dance. Alexa, turn on the moon light. Turning on light.
Okay, so can you pause time?
Let's just enjoy the moment.
Hurry in for exceptional offers on the new BMW X3 with Alexa built in.
I'm not saying my life was perfect before MLB and FTX started calling long home runs in glass, but now things have gotten more challenging. Aim for the moon, they say. Maybe the moon is tired of being a target. Well, if they can go to the moon, then so can I. The FTX app allows me to trade crypto safely and easily to the moon, or to me, I guess.
FTX, official crypto exchange of MLB.
Seriously?
Welcome to Allstate, where we have all new lower auto rates and savings like that make you feel like you won the whole dang thing. Now get new lower auto rates with Allstate. Because better protection costs a whole lot less. You're in good hands with Allstate. Click or call for a lower auto rate today. With clean, fresh ingredients, Panera's new chicken sausage and pepperoni flatbread is a mouth-watering explosion of yes. Craft? Yes. Heartiness? Yes. Living life to the flavor fullest? Heck yes. Panera. Live your yes. Now $1 delivery.
This copyrighted telecast is presented by the authority of the Office of the Commissioner of Baseball and may not be reproduced or retransmitted in any form, and the accounts and descriptions of this game may not be disseminated without express written consent.
If this score holds, we have another four-pack of playoff baseball tomorrow across TBS and FS1. Brewers and Braves in Game 3. Freddie Peralta and Ian Anderson tomorrow. Astros, White Sox right here on FS1 at 3 Eastern. Rays, Red Sox tomorrow. Eduardo Rodriguez for Boston. Alex Wood, Max Scherzer on TBS for Giants, Dodgers. Yasmani Grandal has one of the two big blows for the White Sox tonight in this entire series. They still have only two extra base hits. They both came in the 5-run third. The 2-run Grandal home run that made it 5-3, and the 3-run Leury Garcia home run, which made it 6-5.
Right, Santa continues to work. Rondell quickly behind the count, nothing and two. He's been aboard via walk, homer, that wild sequence with the fielder's choice and error, and then walk in the fifth. Kimbrough got the final out at the top of the eighth inning. 12 in a row sent down by the White Sox pen. And it will be up to Liam Hendricks to try to close this out. Chicago looking for some insurance here in the eighth. There's a cut from Grandal and a strikeout. One away. Let's take a look at our Hyundai lift of the game and travel all the way back in time, many moons ago, to the bottom of the third inning in that five-run frame. Grandal and Garcia. Grandal gets the pitch out. Oppo just out of the reach of Michael Braley. Garcia gets a heater right down the middle. 3-1 count. Gets the White Sox their first lead of the game. Excuse me. 6-5, second lead of the game. The White Sox just kept piling it on from there. A couple crazy plays, but those two home runs were huge. There's Eloy Jimenez. He's got a couple of RBIs tonight on a couple of singles.
Garcia had, what, 5 home runs in regular season?
Yeah.
He hit a 436-foot home run to dead center in the biggest moment of the year. I mean, how clutch is that?
Wow.
Tough.
There's two hits in this series. That was one of them. Next swing. And it's 2-0 on Eloy Jimenez.
You know what's always amazing to me? It doesn't make any sense to talk about it now, but the first and third base umpires, you know, when they catch them in the field, they're just looking in the stands. I have a feeling I would be doing
it. Your vision would drift a little bit?
I think so.
Do you think you'd be influenced by the people in the first row yelling at you?
I think I might be. We talked about it earlier. There's been twice today that I've forgotten I was in the booth. And I was just total fanboying up there watching the game.
Thank you, Craig Cecilia. Thank you, Brain Injury Radio. Thank you most to our listeners, if there's any on the replay. Yes, I fell asleep during the ball game and the radio show. I'm still in a practice mode. Probably will be for a couple more weeks.
You got to put a dent into this as Wayno did. I think AJ actually put a little bit more work into this.
Yeah. Oh, my.
He demolished it. Yeah. Well done, gentlemen.
I left all the lettuce on
top. You're a high-protein guy.
I hate the meat.
Clearly. There's a 2-2 pitch.
I've got to find
In the top of the ninth inning for the Astros, it'll be Myers, Maldonado, and Altuve. So 8-9-1 due up for Houston. Likely
to be Matt in there somewhere. We're in the bees.
48 saves this year. Only Mark Melanson.
Man, there's a lot of
had more in Major League Baseball.
A lot of stuff in the studio. There's my neighbor interview. He's on vacation.
You might see a pitch hitter somewhere in there.
My gardener.
Maldonado, maybe Myers, try to get it going. 3-2. Oh, on the outside edge, at the knees. According to Tom Hallion.
I have no idea.
Jimenez strikes out, looking back-to-back K's for Santa to start the eighth.
Well, I guess I was late.
Such a good pitch, or the Tom Hallion called it. Either way, a frustrating at bat. Stanek is done. He gets the 3 outs that he needs. Further in the bullpen goes Houston.
No dream is too big.
I'm getting there. I'm getting there. Lefty. We going to practice the close again. Thank you to all the listeners and Craig Cecilia and Brain Injury Radio. Kim Justice, I love you. And yes, Gary, I know you love her too.
Help me get my feet back on the ground. Won't you please?
I'll be back.
And there we go.
And that's all, folks.
Any possibility.
One crispy Kentucky Fried Chicken.